This is Wisconsin's Weekend Morning News with Libby Collins.
That tree story, John.
Oh, that's crazy. Can you imagine you look out your window and someone's literally digging up one of your trees?
I have some ash trees they can come and get. I mean, please, take them.
I told the story because I have a peach tree in my yard, and for the second year in a row, we have a guy who pulls up in a van with pick and save bags and is stealing the peaches off the tree when they become ripe. But at least he left the tree.
No, he doesn't ask?
No. And my neighbors have seen him, and he's just big bags full of peaches. But I guess I shouldn't complain. He left the tree in the ground.
Well, maybe bring back a peach cobbler if you're lucky.
I like that.
What are you doing here on a Sunday morning?
I like being here. This is so nice.
I'll tell you, it's great to see you. It's wonderful to have you here. I just never see you this early in the morning.
I love your energy. So I see you passing in the hall. It's fun to be here hanging out with you in the studio.
Oh, well, thank you. And it's great to have you here today. And we've got some fun things that I'm going to tell you about in just a second. But before we do anything else, it is going to be sweltering today. So we have TMJ4 meteorologist Brandon Johnson with us. And Brandon, unbelievable heat. Where is this coming from?
Yeah, Libby, good morning to you and everybody. It's this heat dome expanding into the Midwest in the state of Wisconsin. We've been talking about it for a few days. The peak of the heat, more so focused tomorrow and Tuesday. But like you mentioned, we're going to get a nice taste of it today as well, with temperatures climbing into the mid-80s at the lakefront, lower 90s inland. And we're probably going to have heat index values today between 90 to 95.
I mean, that's unbelievable, because it had been so cool just a couple of weeks ago, and now here we are back in the midst of what we should have had at the end of July.
Yeah, exactly right. And, you know, these numbers that we're going to have within the next couple of days are a solid 10 to 15 degrees above where we would normally be. Average high this time of year is around 79, 80 degrees in Milwaukee. We're talking about getting into the low 90s for our Monday and Tuesday. Now, with dew points, and you probably already feel it this morning, back into the 60s, potentially lower 70s through Tuesday. That means our heat index values tomorrow and Tuesday likely will exceed 100 degrees, especially away from Lake Michigan. So starting tomorrow afternoon, we've got a heat advisory in place for all of our inland counties away from Lake Michigan. And if you're by chance listening around or west of Madison, National Weather Service has issued an excessive heat warning that covers heat index values that could surpass 105. So this heat is unusual, and it's going to be around for at least a couple days, Libby.
Brendan, now, anytime we get this kind of heat, it seems like we are more susceptible for storms developing. Are you seeing anything like that as a possibility?
Yeah, it is a possibility. It is a low chance. I'm more definitely concerned about the heat, because that's going to impact everybody. But Storm Team 4, TMJ4, we are monitoring a storm potential with all of this. There is a limiting factor, Libby, and it's the hot air aloft. We have what we call a cap in place tomorrow as well as Tuesday. Now, if storms are able to vertically build and actually break through that cap, it'll be tough. But if they are, we automatically are already in the game for severe weather, because at that point, the storms are able to take advantage of all the heat and humidity. So if a storm's able to develop, you can expect a possible downpour, gusty winds, and the potential for some hail as well. I'm not really concerned about organized severe weather. We just don't have a lot happening upstairs to really get things organized. But if we're able to fire up some storms and they make it into southeastern Wisconsin, or even develop over us both tomorrow or Tuesday, severe weather is definitely on the table. I'd say there's a better chance with the cold front coming in late Tuesday into early Wednesday. That would probably be our best chance, but I can't rule out a pop-up or at least something coming over from Minnesota and wandering into southern Wisconsin. I will tell you right now, Libby, the storm threat is going to be more of a real-time follow for everybody. So stay with the forecast if you've got outdoor plans, tomorrow, Tuesday. Number one, think of the heat, plan for the heat and humidity, take those heat precautions. But number two, just keep in the back pocket, hey, we might have a chance for some storms, and we're going to be watching it very closely.
And I would think, take a water bottle with you wherever you go.
Absolutely stay in the shade, wear that loose, light-fitted clothing, take those frequent breaks. Remember the kiddos, the cars, do not leave pets or, you know, pets or kids in the cars. All those things that we would normally, like you said, do in July or June, we're doing here at late August heading into September.
Oh, well, it will be a hot one, and I know we will keep an eye on it with you at TMJ4 and right here at WTMJ. TMJ meteorologist Brendan Johnson, it is always a pleasure to have you here, and stay cool today, Brendan.
Always happy to be here, and you too, Libby. Take care.
Thank you. It is 8:12, and we've got a busy show ahead today. We've got former Congressman Scott Clue joining us. He's got thoughts, obviously, on the DNC, RFK's endorsement of Trump, and his observations on why polls aren't as accurate as you might believe. And I think you're going to find what he has to say very interesting, and you're not hearing this in other places. Also, so many of us are excited with the return of Indy Cars to the Milwaukee Mile next weekend, and we're going to be hearing about some very lucky young people who are going to meet with some of the drivers and their teams. Boy, I wish I were there. Okay, also, we're going to tell you where you can hear some music free. Where? Outside on the porch. Where's it going to be? You'll hear about it. We'll have that for you. Also, we've got Teddy Nykel from the Milwaukee Business Journal. She has some thoughts about Harley Davidson's decision to drop those DEI policies. Also, Matt Miller's going to be joining us, and he has an announcement today that you won't want to miss. We'll take a look back at the week in review. John McCure's here in the newsroom. Isaac's putting those buttons. And in just 2 minutes, it's Marquardt with sports right here on WTMJ, where it is 74 degrees at 8:14.
Time for a WTMJ sports update from the Gruber Law Office's One Call That's All sports desk. The Brewers were singing like Dolly Parton as they delivered a 9-5 win over the A's in Oakland yesterday, giving them a 10-game division lead over the Cubs. They'll meet again today with the first pitch at 3:05. Our coverage begins with Brewers warm-up at 2 with Dominic Catronio. After the Packers' decisive preseason win over the Ravens yesterday, there are difficult decisions ahead for the Packers for the 53-man deadline on Tuesday. The Pack beat the Ravens 30-7, and Indy Cars return to Milwaukee for the first time since 2015 next weekend. Practice round begins Friday afternoon, and race one gets underway Saturday at 5, with the second race beginning Sunday afternoon at 1:30. I'm Marquardt with sports.
Ah, I love it. Love the backward hat, too. All right, it is 8:17 on WTMJ. We're up to 74 degrees already. How hot's it going to get today? We're going to tell you in just a couple minutes right here on WTMJ. How hot is it going to be today? Oh, just you wait. We're expecting a lot of humidity. It's going to be a little bit cloudy. We'll get up to about 86 degrees if you're near the lake, but further inland, it's going to be like 91, and it's going to feel like it's somewhere in the mid-90s. And tonight, we've got some clouds moving in. It's still going to be warm overnight, though, 72 degrees. Tomorrow, that's where you really want to start to get ready, because we've got a lot more heat and humidity coming in. Those high temperatures are going to be around 91 near the lake, 96 inland. That heat index is going to rise to 95 to 105 degrees. And we do have a slight chance of storms. Then on Tuesday, more heat, more humidity, partly cloudy, a chance of storms late in the day. Getting up to 92 near the lake, 96 inland, and the heat index, once again, 95 to 108 degrees. Finally cooling down on Wednesday when we get back down to the low 80s. Right now, in Cedarburg, it's 73 degrees. South Milwaukee has 74. Elm Grove's at 73. We have 74 degrees at WTMJ at 820. It's time to check in with Teddy Nykel, of course, from the Milwaukee Business Journal. And last week, Teddy, a lot of people were talking about Harley Davidson's announcement that they were no longer going to have diversity, equity, inclusion policies for the business. But there's a little bit of fallout as we're finding out that maybe other companies in the area are going to follow that lead.
You know, actually, Libby, the good news is the companies locally we've talked to have said that they are committed to keeping their diversity, equity, inclusion initiative. So it kind of seems like Harley is a little bit isolated in this sense, which is a good thing if you support diversity, equity, and inclusion. But just to back up a little bit, Harley-Davidson on Monday issued a statement after a lot of backlash by conservative social media influencers in recent weeks who kind of were pushing the company, criticizing the company's wokeness and embracing of DEI. So last week, Harley-Davidson issued a statement saying that it was saddened by the negativity on social media, but that it no longer has a DEI function and it has discontinued its diversity spending goals. So this actually got national attention just because it's a major company saying they are no longer embracing DEI, which is in recent years, we've seen so many companies signing on to DEI initiatives, particularly since 2020 when we had the unfortunate incident in Minneapolis with George Floyd's death. But anyway, we have talked this week and last week to a lot of other employers in the area, kind of asking them what they think about this, if they plan to also cut DEI initiatives, especially in an election year and as budgets are getting tight. But the companies that we heard back from, which included Manpower Group, Rockwell Automation, Freighter, WEC Energy Group, which owns We Energies, those companies all said that they remain committed to their DEI goals.
Did any of them avoid answering your question? Or did all the ones you reached out to say, yes, we're absolutely
no.
going to keep
so,
DEI?
No, so yes, we did not hear back. We probably reached out to about a dozen companies locally and only heard back from five. So I can't speak for the ones that didn't respond. Mm-hmm. But yes, not everyone answered our question. So that does kind of raise the question if there are other companies facing pressure. You know, interestingly, it seems to be more consumer-focused companies like Harley, Bud Light, for example, or Anheuser-Busch, not based in Milwaukee, but have faced more scrutiny of their DEI programs than business firms. So that is an interesting thing as well. Just kind of depends on the type of business that's facing this backlash. But another thing to note is Milwaukee's largest business group, the Milwaukee Metropolitan Association of Commerce, MMAC, they launched a Region of Choice initiative about 5 years ago with the goal of increasing Black and Hispanic hiring for management positions. And they are continuing that program, and they have seen success with that program. So that's encouraging to see that lots of local employers signed on to that pledge and have been increasing their diversity in that way.
Do you think that Harley-Davidson made this decision based on what they were hearing from their customers and they wanted to reflect their political beliefs?
Yeah, a lot of the criticism that they were hearing was on social media, but they also did, you know, at their recent Sturgis Harley rally, they had motorcyclists who are kind of supporting the criticisms as well. So it does seem to be kind of something that they believe that's in line with their brand. They see it as allowing more freedom is kind of how I've seen it phrased, you know, not imposing DEI initiatives. The company did say that they continue to have employee resource groups within the company that focus on professional development and networking and mentoring for various groups that are aimed at women, veterans, Hispanic populations, Asian and African American groups, and LGBT plus employees. So, you know, that's a form of DEI as well. But the company said it's exclusively focused on growing the sport of motorcycling and retaining its loyal riding community. So long answer to your question, but yeah, it's a complicated issue.
Well, a lot of Harley riders love wide open spaces. And I understand if you got $65 million burning a hole in your pocket, you can get a 190-acre ranch out in Wyoming.
Yeah, so Herb Cole, the well-known Milwaukee business executive and philanthropist who passed away last year, he owned this property in Wyoming since the 70s. And now he's passed away. The property is for sale for $65 million. The really interesting thing is the proceeds from the sale will go to Herb Cole Philanthropies. So that's a lot of money that this local philanthropy organization could be seeing. But Herb Cole used this beautiful ranch in Wyoming as a personal retreat, and he also hosted friends and employees there. For people who don't remember, former Senator Herb Cole was a U.S. Senator. He also was formerly the owner of the Milwaukee Bucks, very well known. And he was known for hosting people at this ranch, including Bud Selig of the former MLB commissioner. So a lot of Milwaukeeans have probably been to this ranch. And now, yeah, the beautiful property is for sale.
In all the research you did on that story, did it come up how much he paid for that originally in the 70s?
That's a great question. That was not something that did come up. But interestingly, he purchased it from a different U.S. Senator, Clifford Hansen, who was also formerly, I believe, the governor of Wyoming. So that area of Wyoming is actually known locally as Senator's Row. So that was an interesting thing I did find out during my research there.
Ah, so that's where all the politicians hang out in the off season.
Yeah.
Speaking of real estate, tell us about this apartment complex that's proposed now in South Milwaukee.
Yeah, so we're talking about the former Bucyrus Erie campus in South Milwaukee. That was a manufacturer that was purchased by Caterpillar, and then Caterpillar moved out of that facility in about 2018. And ever since then, there's been various efforts to redevelop that former industrial area. For the last several years, a local developer, QL Amin of Scott Crawford Development, has been planning to redevelop a couple of several buildings on the property into housing. And he's gone through several proposals and several iterations of that plan in the last few years. As of right now, the plan is moving forward. Right now, the latest version is a $50 million development. It would include 177 apartments and 8,000 square feet of commercial space on that former industrial campus. The project still needs more city approvals before the work can begin, but the latest news that we have recently is that the project is still moving forward, and we have the kind of the latest plans on what they're proposing for that site.
My favorite story of the week, Teddy, the funky fresh spring rolls. I love the name of that business. Tell us about it.
Yeah, this is a great heartwarming local story. So Funky Fresh Spring Rolls, Milwaukee company that started out of the Sherman Phoenix Marketplace. They operated there for 5 years, and they've really developed a great following. After kind of starting out at Sherman Phoenix, they began partnering with the company behind Palermo to develop frozen products, and they've been expanding that. So the products are available in Outpost Natural Foods locations in the Milwaukee area, and they're preparing for more of a national distribution next year. So it's really cool to see kind of this locally homegrown company really branching out. They've, again, developed a following, and so now these fresh spring rolls are available frozen, and in October they're going to be available at Woodman's and Sendick's markets. So they're rolling out at more and more stores with plans to expand to 100 stores regionally by the end of this year and 500 stores nationally in 2025 through a partnership with Palermo. So really exciting for this local entrepreneur.
And I love the name Funky Fresh Spring Rolls. Teddy Nichol, always great to have you here.
Thanks so much, Libby.
828 and 75 degrees at WTMJ. Welcome back. I'm Libby Collins on Wisconsin Weekend Morning News. It is 8:35. It's going to be a hot one today. 76 degrees already at WTMJ. Well, quite a week it was, with four not guilty pleas in a downtown Milwaukee murder case. Plus, there was an up and down week for the Airbender, a historic nomination in Chicago, and so much more. It's a week in review brought to you by Outdoor Living Unlimited.
What we do here is go back.
We are not going back.
Oh, okay.
Throw the safety down.
Zach wants to throw it and be taken down. Drop for a safety in the end zone. Drop by Zach Morton.
Not good enough. Got humbled in practice and certainly got humbled again today.
Every time
you're going to come to my press conference late, we got a rule in the team meeting. You don't interrupt the meeting. Sit your butt outside. Just kidding.
Got him! This is the most serious crime known to man.
Crystal Kaiser will serve 16 years for her reckless homicide conviction connected to the 2018 death of Randall Villar.
That hospital, Children's, was able to save our daughter's life.
To thank Children's Wisconsin, the Fazaris regularly brought food and gifts to the staff.
The work they do is amazing, saves lives every day.
And the 1-2 pitch. Swing and a miss! He struck him out!
My brother and I discovered the new Avatar. An airbender named
Devin Williams.
All four suspects in the death of a man outside a downtown Milwaukee hotel plead not guilty to felony murder.
Both Erickson and Turner had their bail amounts lowered to $5,000 each.
$5,000 is just far from appropriate for the type of charges that the defendants in this case face.
The demand for the two-year degree has waned.
But Universities of Wisconsin President Jay Rothman tells Wisconsin's Morning News there are options for these branch satellites if a proposed $855 million budget increase gets approved.
For some students, whether we're relatively affordable or not is not relevant, because if we're not affordable for them, it doesn't make any difference.
I see like one kind of big black thing. Yep, nope.
That indeed is a problem. So I can't tell exactly what it is, but the bottom line is traffic will be moving along slowly just to make sure nobody goes over that.
Is it a ladder?
It is not a ladder.
Is it a dog?
It's not that big. I know. Is this a guessing game?
Is it a dog with a ladder?
Oh, gosh. No, Greg, don't say, is it a dog? Oh, gosh. Somebody just hit it.
Is it on fire? The ladder? The dog? Is it on fire?
Well, that was pointless.
And now for something completely different.
The Democratic National Convention is officially underway.
At the DNC, you'll not only find supporters of Vice President Kamala Harris, but even some former co-workers.
We're colleagues in the city attorney's office, and she's a great lawyer.
Freedom, freedom. Vice President Kamala Harris heads up to Milwaukee for a rally this evening at Fiserv Forum alongside her running mate Tim Walz.
Having the Vice President come to Milwaukee and Governor Walz just showcases the importance of not just the city, but the entire state of Wisconsin.
Good evening, Milwaukee! This is a people-powered campaign, and together we will chart a new way forward!
We need a medical assistant here.
This is the first time a vice president of the United States has been the one to point out the ill person. So that is certainly a first for me.
Dr. Ben Weston and a team of emergency responders quickly sprang into action on the floor of Fiserv Forum.
Governor Tony Evers absolutely booted his moment in the national spotlight.
Former Wisconsinite, former state. Oh my God.
Engine one is out. Engine two is out.
The parents of one of those American hostages in Gaza took the stage. Rachel Goldberg Poland broke down in tears when she and her husband were greeted with an extended applause at the DNC.
Hirsch, if you can hear us, we love you.
On behalf of everyone whose story could only be written in the greatest nation on earth, I accept your nomination to be President of the United States of America.
What are we, gay?
Put the wiener in the bun.
Oh, my God.
They are out of their minds.
Ladies and gentlemen, The Weeknd.
And The Weeknd Review is sponsored by Outdoor Living Unlimited. I'm Libby Collins. Coming up in just a couple minutes, I'm going to tell you where you can hear free music next Friday and Saturday. And it's good stuff, too. It's all ahead on Wisconsin Weeknd Morning News.
I'm a soul man.
It is going to be hot, hot, hot today. A high of 86 near the lake, 91 inland. Heat index between 90 and 95 degrees. So stay hydrated. We're up to 76 already at WTMJ. Well, you can enjoy some live music this Friday and Saturday in Cedarburg. And joining us is Angie Mack. She is from Ozaki Talent. And Angie, tell us about this music on the porch.
Next weekend is an international event called Play Music on the Porch Day. So if you go to playmusicontheporchday.com, you will see a map that contains all of the historic places and current places that are playing music. And it's basically, it started about 10 years ago by a guy named Brian Malman. And he formed the idea of, what if one day everything stopped and we just all listened to the music? So I'm happy to be participating in that event in Grafton at my home, which I've nicknamed the Grafton House of Blues.
Now tell us, what do you plan to play and how long are you going to be playing?
Well, it's a combination of musicians who will be playing on Friday, August 30th, and also Saturday, August 31st, from approximately 1 until, maybe 9:30 p.m. or so. And it's just an event where various local musicians will be showcasing their talents. I have some of my private students who will be playing. I have a couple blues legends who will be coming to play on my porch. So it's a full day of music coming from my porch on Grafton, Wisconsin, which is located just about 2 blocks from the old Paramount Record Factory and recording studio.
Do you have to pay to come and listen to the music, or can you just sort of hang out as long or as short a time as you like?
It is a free event, like I said, put on all around the world. You can pull up a chair, you can stand, you can park in the street, listen from your car, you can drive by and honk. It's just sort of a drop-in thing, and like I said, places all over are going to be celebrating this Play Music on the Porch Day.
Well, it sounds like a lot of fun. So again, it's next Friday and Saturday in Grafton at your home, which is called what again?
Well, I've nicknamed it the Grafton House of Blues. So you can read more about that on graftonhouseofblues.com. It's just my private home with a nickname and a story.
Angie, it sounds like a fun event. A lot of people are going to be joining you, and we'll see you on Friday and Saturday next weekend.
Thank you.
I can't imagine just saying to a bunch of musicians, come on, play music on my porch. Because I don't have a very big porch. Now, maybe on the deck, but not on the porch. It's 8:45, coming up in just a minute. Mark Horton Sports right here on WTMJ.
Time for a WTMJ sports update from the Gruber Law Office's One Call That's All Sports Desk. The Brewers were singing like Dolly Parton as they delivered a 9-5 win over the A's in Oakland yesterday, giving them a 10-game division lead over the Cubs. They'll meet again today with the first pitch at 3:05. Our coverage begins with Brewers warm-up at 2 o'clock with Dominic Catronio. And after the Packers' decisive preseason win over the Ravens yesterday, there are difficult decisions ahead for the Packers for the 53-man deadline on Tuesday. The Pack beat the Ravens 30-7. And IndyCar's return to Milwaukee for the first time since 2015 next weekend. Practice rounds begin Friday afternoon, and race one gets underway Saturday at 5, with the second race beginning Sunday afternoon at 1:30. I'm Mark Wart with WTMJ Sports.
Hey, speaking of that big Indy event at the Milwaukee Speedway, we've got somebody coming up here right after 9 o'clock who's going to talk about some very lucky kids. We're going to meet some real famous racers. That's right after the 9 o'clock news. Coming up, though, in just a couple minutes, we've got Matt Miller here, and he's got an announcement you won't want to miss. It's all ahead on Wisconsin Weekend Morning News. The next 3 days, we are expecting a lot of heat and humidity. Today, we're going to get up to about 86 degrees if you're close to the lake, but 91 inland. That heat index is going to be right around 90 to 95 degrees, down to 72 tonight. But then tomorrow, more heat and humidity. Slight chance of storms, but temperatures getting even warmer. 91 near the lake, 96 inland. Heat index is going to rise to 95 to 105 degrees. And then on Tuesday, more heat and humidity in the forecast with a chance of PM storms. A high of 92, that's 96 inland. Heat index all the way up to 95 to 108 degrees, cooling off on Wednesday. Temperature right now, Sheboygan has 73 degrees. Delafield's at 75. Tosa has 76, and we have 76 degrees at 850 on WTMJ. Well, it's time to check in on our Tri-County Contracting Hotline with media critic and pop culture editor at onmilwaukee.com. Matt Miller is here with us, and there's a reason we played that song, Matt.
Oh.
It's bye-bye-bye bye time.
Yes, unfortunately, I am moving on to new exciting opportunities, and that means new times, and unfortunately this will be our last song. And the worst part is there's not even that many good movies to talk about on this thing. I'm ending on a total damp squib here.
All right, so what is there to see right now?
So there's the new The Crow remake, which was a bad idea. It's been a bad idea forever. That is a cult movie about a guy who gets killed, he gets murdered, and he comes back from the dead to seek vengeance on all of them. And it was a big cult movie back in the 90s, A, because it was coming out during the super grunge era, and it was coming out, you know, you had the backstory with Brandon Lee tragically dying on the set of the movie, so you had all sorts of backstory. It's so specific to that experience. And for some odd reason, they were like, well, we should remake that very 90s-specific, moment-specific movie. And go figure, no one wants to see it, and go figure, it's not very good, you know? There's not a lot of emotion behind it. If you're going to check anything out this weekend, I would check out Blink Twice, which is the new thriller from Zoe Kravitz.
Yeah, that looks really intriguing. And she's directing it, right? But she doesn't act in it.
She co-wrote it and directed it, and it's about a bunch of women who get to go to this private island owned by Channing Tatum's kind of tech bro billionaire, and things go bad on the island. Things go really bad in interesting ways. It's kind of a revenge thriller situation. If you like stuff like Get Out, or if you like stuff like Ready or Not, I think Blink Twice is a really good kind of entry in that kind of subgenre. And this is her first film, and it's really impressive. So I'd be interested to see what she does next.
Well, plus she found her love on that set, because she and Channing Tatum are now an item.
Yeah, and I think it's an actually really good use of Channing Tatum, because, you know, he is so charming on screen and so kind of guileless on screen. You see him and he's like a little puppy dog, and they kind of weaponize that really well in Blink Twice. So I would check that out. As far as a late summer movie goes, this is kind of, you know, Hollywood dumping grounds. This is one of the better kind of Hollywood abandons.
How's that Blake Lively movie doing? Is it kind of slowed down now?
It's made over $100 million.
What?
It's one of the highest grossing. I know. It was very successful, made $50 million in its opening weekend. This is what happens when you make movies aimed at women audiences. They want to see movies. They want to see stories that resonate with them. And Hollywood, for some odd reason, is like, oh, that's interesting. Let's never do that. So it's nice to see that, you know, this is being successful. And hopefully this means more of these kind of movies getting greenlit. Better versions would be even better, because I think It Ends With Us is pretty good. But I think there's even better stories to be told in kind of that genre.
All right. So is there anything else that we really want to see right now?
So next week is kind of another kind of empty zone. Like I said, we're in that kind of weird, school's going back, so Hollywood's not releasing many big movies. But 2 weeks from now, you get the new Beetlejuice movie that I think is going to be a huge hit this fall. I think everyone's very excited about that. You have all the original cast basically coming back. You've got newcomers like Jenna Ortega. And you've got Tim Burton not doing the crummy CG from Alice in Wonderland that he kind of fell in love with. It looks like he's going back to kind of the old school 90s visual trick. So I'm actually quite excited for the Beetlejuice.
Well, you know what I find really interesting is in the original Beetlejuice, Michael Keaton as that character was only in the movie for 17 minutes. And apparently he agreed to do this sequel only if his time is limited in this one as well.
And I think that's really smart. It's a little bit like the Heath Ledger in The Dark Knight thing, where you forget how much he's not in that movie. And that's because every time he's on screen, you are excited. You don't have the Captain Jack Sparrow syndrome. Of, you know, after a while, the movies came about that character, and it was like, you know, it was having candy for dinner, you know, it was too much of a good thing. And what seemed special and kind of fun off to the sidelines became, oh, okay, this is too much. So I think it was really smart of them to not lean too hard on, like, we're bringing Beetlejuice back and he's the main character. Who wants that? You have to normalize the main character.
Well, Michael Keaton has had quite a year or so with bringing back characters from 30 years ago.
It's so funny that he kind of came back into Hollywood's good graces with Birdman, a whole movie about, oh, bringing back old characters and comic book movies and how that's, you know, the death of Hollywood. And now his whole entire career is bringing back old characters in comic book movies, essentially. But you know what? He's definitely earned it. And when he does take a swing on something like a Spotlight, he's very good. He's still a really great actor. And I'm hoping, you know, Beetlejuice becomes a hit. Hopefully that kind of opens things up for him to do more interesting projects, for Tim Burton to do more interesting projects. I would love to see him kind of go back into that Sleepy Hollow range that he was in. I think that's a really fun movie. So hopefully, like I said, this is a big success and a kind of big surprise hit to start the fall season.
I've always thought of Michael Keaton as sort of a quirky version of Tom Hanks.
Yes, he's a little bit like the crazy uncle to Tom Hanks' America's Dad. You know, that's always kind of been their shtick.
The brother that you don't talk about.
I would watch the heck out of a Tom Hanks, Michael Keaton road trip comedy. That sounds like a movie we need to write and pitch. Maybe that's why I'm going into Sunday morning retirement.
That's what I was going to say. That's what Matt is going to be working on. Matt, I got to tell you, I have so enjoyed our time here together. I don't know what I'm going to do now that I won't know what's going on the Great British Baking Show.
Oh, well, you can always send me a text message. I am always willing to. And if there is something big in media going on that you want to know more about, if it's Oscar season or end of the year season and you need to know what's going on, I am always available. I'm always willing to talk about movies for 5 or 10 minutes,
and even Matt,
on a Sunday after morning.
and Matt, if you ever just have an urge, you've got to get it off your chest, you know where to find us.
Sounds like a plan. I will be pestering the talk and text line all the time.
Oh, listen to that. Oh. There.
Aww.
Thank you, Isaac. Yes, it is hard to say goodbye, but it's always great to have Matt Miller from onmilwaukee.com here. Thank you, Matt.
No, thanks for having me. It's been real, Libby.
Take care now. It is just a couple minutes before 9 o'clock. We've got John McCure in the WTMJ Breaking News Center, and then we're going to be back. A great opportunity for some young people to meet some IndyCar racers. We'll tell you about it. It's all ahead on Wisconsin Weekend Morning News. Do you want to do anything outside today? I mean, when you hear those temperatures?
I got my yard work done yesterday, knowing it was going to be hot today. So, nope, today's an inside day.
We've got a family thing, and it's supposed to be outside. But I'm hoping they let us in the house.
Yeah. Better behave yourself.
Can I come in, please?
No,
please? So it's one of those days. Here, are you excited about the IndyCar series coming to Milwaukee?
I am. I'm glad it's back. I was thinking at State Fair when we were parking on the track to go in, like how cool it is that where we were parking, the Indy cars are going to be back with the biggest names in racing.
I know. Well, guess what? There are some lucky kids who are not only going to see the race, they're going to get to meet some of the teams involved. And joining us is Julie Granger. She is the president of Junior Achievement of Wisconsin. And Julie, tell us a little bit about this partnership between Junior Achievement and IndyCar. I mean, it just sounds so exciting.
It is. And I have to say, I looked ahead at the forecast, all this talk of the heat that's with us today. Next weekend looks absolutely perfect if the temperatures hold. So looking forward to a great day with some great weather, let's hope, right?
How did you end up collaborating?
Yeah, so this is really the mastermind of one of Junior Achievement's longtime and dedicated supporters, Jim Fuchs, who's a successful longtime businessman here in Milwaukee. And Jim is an avid race car fan, and he's a driver himself. And this partnership is really a way for Jim to bring together his two passions, education and race car driving. And he really wants to pass that on to the next generation and foster kids who are interested in racing for the future, right? We got to keep the fan base going.
You know, what I find interesting is somehow, I guess Jim and you and IndyCar has convinced the Penske team to meet with some of these kids. And I mean, the Penske team, that is one of the biggest names in racing.
Yes, it is going to be an incredible opportunity for these 100 students and their families. So in between races, they're going to have the qualifying round one and round two starting around 1:45 on Saturday. That's when our event is. The students are going to be divided up into groups who are able to then tour the paddock, learn all about the different careers behind racing, and meet some of the drivers as well. So it's a really exciting opportunity. And for us, the real connection to JA is all about career readiness. That's one of our critical pathways that we work to provide for kids. And, you know, we're always searching for ways to make learning come to life and make these experiences unique, because that's what really sticks with kids and opens their eyes to the wide variety of possibilities that are out there, right? Kids cannot be what they can't see.
We're talking with Julie Granger. She's president of Junior Achievement of Wisconsin. And Julie, how do experiences like this help kids to envision their future and their careers?
Yeah, I think in so many fields, we only see the final product, right? And it's so true for events like this as well. But it takes a whole team of experts in all different areas to make it work. And during the tour, students are going to be introduced to some of the jobs that are essential to racing, from mechanics and engineers to marketing, logistics. And they're going to be able to see that no matter what their interests are, those interests and strengths and talents can be applied to such a wide variety of careers, careers they might not ever have imagined before. And they're going to get a chance to get up close and personal with these folks ask some questions and just really get that peek under the hood, so to speak.
I just think it's so exciting. Now, you had mentioned Jim Fuchs, and he, of course, is the donor behind this event. But how important is community and corporate support to junior achievement?
Yeah, community and corporate support partnerships are critical to everything we do. JA receives no government funding, and individual and corporate donors make everything we do possible. Last year, Junior Achievement, which is a statewide organization, was able to serve 120,000 students. And that doesn't just happen. That happens as a direct result of dedicated supporters, both financial and volunteers. It takes an army of volunteers to deliver the kind of educational programs that we do, 7,000 of them throughout the last year, who really bring their own life and career experiences to the JA students from kindergarten all the way through high school and beyond. We're just starting to work with college students as well.
Now, as you look ahead, what do you see in terms of other events that could help to shape the future of Junior Achievement Wisconsin?
Yeah, we're always trying to think outside the box and outside the classroom. And so what can we provide that reinforces hands-on learning? Because we know that when students do versus just listening, that's what really resonates and can make a difference. And an event like this, where they're going to be able to meet race car drivers, experience the whole day, that's an opportunity and an experience that's going to stick with them for the rest of their lives. So always looking for opportunities like that. And then, you know, every day we work to bring careers to life through things like our career fairs, bringing career speakers into schools, and bringing students into businesses through job shadow opportunities as well.
We're going to have to get one of those students next Sunday after the event to share their experience, because I think it's so exciting for them. And what a wonderful opportunity.
That will be fabulous. Yep, we are so excited and looking forward to next weekend.
Finally, Julie, if anybody wants to learn more about Junior Achievement Wisconsin, how can they do it?
You bet. It is wisconsin.ja.org. There you can find all the information about the programs that we do, volunteering. We are always looking for volunteers, and of course, ways to donate to the organization.
Julie Granger, president of Junior Achievement of Wisconsin, thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
It's 9:14, and in just a couple minutes, it's Mark Hort on Sports right here on WTMJ.
Time for a WTMJ Sports update from the Gruber Law Office's One Call That's All Sports desk. The Brewers were singing like Dolly Parton as they delivered a 9-5 win over the A's in Oakland yesterday, giving them a 10-game division lead over the Cubs. They'll meet again today with the first pitch at 3:05. Our coverage begins with Brewers warm-up at 2 with Dominic Catronio. After the Packers' decisive preseason win over the Ravens yesterday, there are difficult decisions ahead for the Packers for the 53-man deadline on Tuesday. The Pack beat the Ravens 30-7. And IndyCars return to Milwaukee for the first time since 2015 next weekend. Practice rounds begin Friday afternoon, and race one gets underway Saturday at 5, with the second race beginning Sunday afternoon at 1:30. This is Mark Hort with WTMJ Sports.
I don't know if you saw it at State Fair. They had one of the IndyCars in the Expo Center, so you could see it up close. I don't know how those guys get in that little teeny tiny space. And the cars are so big.
It's such a small space in a huge car with huge tires.
Oh, well, not only that, but a very large engine. All right, it is 9:17. Coming up in just a couple minutes, we've got your forecast. It's already up to about 78 degrees, and it is going to be sweltering today. Also coming up in the next half hour, we're going to hear from former Congressman Scott Klug. John McCure is going to join us for that conversation with him, and we're going to be talking about polls. We're going to be talking about the DNC. We're going to be talking about how RFK could have changed the race. It's all ahead on Wisconsin Weekend Morning News. We have been talking about it all morning long, starting with TMJ4 meteorologist Brenda Johnson. It is going to be an extremely hot couple of days. Today, we're going to get up to about 86 if you're near the lake, but as you go further inland, 91 or maybe even higher. That heat index is already going to be up to about 90 to 95 degrees. And tonight, we're going to stay warm, about 72 overnight. Tomorrow, more heat, more humidity, a slight chance of storms, those temperatures near the lake, 91. Further inland, getting to 96 or higher. Heat index is going to be around 95 to 105 degrees. Then on Tuesday, even warmer with more heat and humidity, a chance of some late day storms, a high of 92 near the lake, 96 inland. The heat index, and I can't even believe I'm saying this, anywhere from about 95 to 108 degrees. That's just unbelievable. It's going to be sweltering. So I would plan your next couple of days. If you can stay inside, stay cooled, you'll definitely want to do that. If you are out, make sure you stay hydrated, protect your kids, protect your pets. It is going to be a hot couple of days. Currently, we have 79 degrees at WTMJ at 922.
The following is a paid presentation. Advice and opinions expressed during the Sunday Sip are solely that of the hosts or guests and not WTMJ Radio or Good Karma Brands Milwaukee, LLC.
And welcome to the Sunday Sip here on 620 WTMJ. I'm the host of the Sunday Sip today, but I'm also the host of the Political Power Hour, Monday through Friday, 9 to 10 on WTMJ. But it's not about that, and it's not about me. It's about Rose Gray from Fox World Travel, who you can hear every Saturday morning, or most Saturdays when she's not traveling around the globe. But we have a special announcement, Rose Gray, today.
We do, and it's been long coming, so we're very excited to finally get it out to the public.
Yes, we're calling it the Sicily and Malta Mosaic, because one of the things I love about working with Rose Gray and Fox World Travel is I talk to her throughout the year because we see each other and we talk on the shows, and she on my show and me on her show occasionally. And I always tell her this is like my wish list, and one of my wish lists is, of course, one of my home countries, because I was born in England, but my real home country is Sicily, because that's where my grandma and grandpa came from on my dad's side. And I love archaeology. So when I was talking to Rose about this trip to Sicily and Malta Mosaic in October of 2025, once again, Rose Gray from Fox World Travel, you've sort of matched my wish list with a really cool experience for all the listeners who want to go along.
Well, aren't you sweet to say that? So it really wasn't that complicated, because the country that we're referring to, which is where Steve's heritage lies, is the beautiful island country of Sicily.
Absolutely. And so it's a longer trip, which is another thing that I want to do. 13-day journey, Sicily and Malta. Let's kind of walk through some of the things that we can experience. We're going to visit Monreale Cathedral, Rose?
Yeah, I would say Monreale.
Okay.
In my Italian accent.
Okay. See, I'm not a perfect Italian. I don't even know how to say the words.
Exactly. So I don't want people to get the impression that this is just going to be what they sometimes refer to as ABC, another bloody church, another bloody castle.
Right.
But we are going to see some pretty remarkable things that I don't think you'll see elsewhere. I'm not trying to imply that when you go to Italy, for example, and you see cathedral after cathedral, that they all are the same. They're certainly not. But in your mind, they start running together. And here I think, because the history of Sicily is so unique, the Phoenicians, the Greeks, the Romans, the Arabs, the French, the German, Italians, including British, so there's your heritage right there, all have played a part in the history of this gorgeous island of Sicily. And so the diverse architecture and the diverse culture and certainly the diverse cuisine is what makes this such an amazing trip. And then you throw in beautiful coastlines and the great city of Palermo, which that's where we start our journey.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that country alone could stand on its own.
And you forgot about the wine, Rose Gray.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about the fabulous wine.
Which is always good.
When we're in Marsala, we will be drinking copious amounts of wine, and maybe throughout the trip as well.
So I want to do this a couple times. I want to give people an opportunity, because we are launching the trip to the public this week, but we also have some loyal listeners who probably have already signed up, because they always have that early notice. But we want to make sure that you understand this is a 13-day trip. It's next October, not this October, the one that's coming up in a month, right before our election here in the United States. It's next October, and the dates are the 3rd through the 16th of 2025. Folks, all you have to do is contact Fox World Travel. I have the number right in front of me, and correct me if I'm wrong. It's 888-369-8785, right?
Right, and I also like to remind people who can't remember that, just dial 866-GO-FOX-GO.
And that works too.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're going to be talking about this a lot on my show as we sort of, you know, move through the year, because I want people to understand we sold out our last one in Tuscany. We love that thing. We had a big group for the German trip, which was absolutely spectacular. And if it's not enough to have all the great architecture and archaeology and the food, which is amazing, and all of these places that we go to, and the wine and all the things that you get to celebrate when you're on a vacation. The customers, the clients, the listeners are part of the experience, because we've developed such great relationships over the years, Rose, with all of these people. We go to dinner with them. We gather in groups for like sort of a reunion trip. It is sort of a very cool experience that I'm glad I got to do a couple times with you.
And we also should add that even I thought that Sicily would be the perfect destination and it could be a nice 9 or 10 day trip and we could call it good. But we always like to find some place that our on-air personalities like Steve have not been. So we added a little bonus to the end of the trip, which is Malta.
Which I did some homework on. I've been watching a lot of like documentaries on Malta. Malta is one of the places, and now it's a separate country, very small, that is one of the most ancient places on Earth. And if you're interested in that stuff, and I am, archaeology, I like, as my wife Kathy likes to joke, I like to touch old things. She likes to take pictures of me touching old things, and that doesn't count myself because I don't consider myself old. Neither do you, Rose, right?
No, not at all.
No, we don't live old. We live young, which is why we travel.
We live young.
All right. So, Malta has some of the most cool ancient sites on the planet. We're talking 10,000 years old, 12,000 years old, and we're going to see some of that. Another thing that somebody just told me, one of my loyal listener pals is going to go on this trip, what they also like is a little bit of free time built in.
We love to do that, and I've used this term, or this phrase, I should say, many times when people are explaining to me that they're a little concerned about group travel. Maybe you've done all your own travel for all these years, and you like to sort of have that freedom to do whatever you want. But when you're talking about a trip like Sicily and Malta, I feel like you have to have some kind of formulated itinerary. And so we like to include some free time. And many, many, many years ago, we should say we're partnering with our good friends at Globus Family of Brands to do this particular trip. Many years ago, I took my parents on a group trip, and my father was very resistant. He was a self-guided guy. And with day 3 of the trip, he said to me over breakfast, "I get it now, Rose. I get why group travel is appealing. Within the structure lies the freedom."
We're calling to Sicily and Malta Mosaic with yours truly, Steve Scafidi, from the Political Power Hour, October 3rd through the 16th, 2025. Rose Gray, Fox World Travel, 888-369-8785. Do not hesitate. This thing will sell out. This is a very popular trip. Rose, I always enjoy our conversations. We'll do it a lot more between now and then. Thank you, Rose.
Thank you.
You have been listening to the Sunday Sip right here on 620 WTMJ.
Thanks, Steve. It's 79 degrees at 928 on WTMJ. And welcome back to the final half hour of Wisconsin Weekend Morning News. I'm Libby Collins. John McCure's here with me this morning.
I love it. I love being here with you.
And, well, listen, you're going to like this even better, because joining us is former Congressman Scott Klug. He, of course, has a podcast. It's called Lost in the Middle. And I know as we're getting closer to this election in November, Scott, you've got more to say about what's going to happen. First of all, good morning.
Morning, Libby. Hi, John.
Hey, thank you, Congressman.
How do you feel after watching the DNC this past week?
Oh, I thought the Democrats had a great convention, and I thought she had a very solid speech. And from my point of view, she gets huge applause for simply keeping it to 45 minutes. Because when I was in office, I was there for Bill Clinton's State of the Union addresses, which sometimes went longer than 2 hours. So, I think, as somebody who's not necessarily a fan of the ticket, I still have to give him high marks for the way they handled it.
Well, John, you had something.
I want to ask you, Congressman, about Lost in the Middle kind of describes you. And you have the reputation of, as being somebody who would work across aisles and get things done. In the RNC in Milwaukee and the DNC in Chicago, and I was at both, we did our show from both, the entire run of each. They all talk about unity and coming together, but it seems like it's about unity within the party and coming together within the party. Even Michelle Obama took shots at the Trump administration. How do we get to where we're coming together as a country and not just coming together either as a group of red or a group of blue?
Oh, sure. I can cover that in the next 45 seconds.
We'll give you a minute and a half.
Well, I think here's the key thing. I think one thing we need to figure out is, you know, politics has always been rough and tumble. I mean, if you go back and look at our founding fathers, you know, Hamilton was a play basically on one of the founding fathers who got shot in a fight with one of the other founding fathers. But I think the fundamental, you know, basis of American politics and the American system is the ability to disagree, but to respect somebody else's opinion. And that's what we've seen the loss. And there's a million reasons for it. I mean, part of the problem in the House is redistricting. There is no center. There's no moderate Republicans or moderate Democrats left. A big part of it is social media. A big part of it, I think, is traditional media, which struggles to find subscribers and viewers. And so they go down the rabbit hole that'll get people to subscribe. I think all those things blend together. And, you know, I think if you look at what goes on in Washington or goes on in those conventions, it has very little to do with what goes on in normal people's lives. And look, you know, for some reason, this is accepted behavior in political circles. I mean, you can't act this way to other people at PMJ. You can't act this way if you drop in at church on a Sunday morning. You can't do that when you go see your kids' school teachers for conferences. You sure as hell can't do it at your own breakfast table. But for some reason, this kind of behavior has become accepted in American politics. And I think most people, myself included, are just sick of it.
You know what, and John, I think you made this point to me the other day. There were 15,000 journalists at the DNC, only 5,000 at the RNC. Why do you think there was such a disparity on that, Scott?
Oh, I mean, I think back to my earlier point. I don't ever think that individual journalists slant stories. I mean, I'm still active in the journalism school at Northwestern where I went to. Most reporters I know are as persnickety about facts that they've always been. But I think it's a sense of the worldview. And, you know, if you look, there was a national study done by Nate Silver, who's had a long-standing poll thing and made his way in doing poll forecasting like we may talk about. Only 6% of journalists self-describe as Republicans. If you saw the column from the NPR or in the national headquarters of NPR, one of their columnists went and looked at, saw where people registered. And you can do that in a lot of states. You have to register either as a Republican or a Democrat. And Virginia and Maryland are two of those. There was not a single Republican in the NPR newsroom. So I think it's really an echo chamber. And I think it reflects sort of the bias of the press to a large degree. I mean, I think they gave Trump fair coverage, but it seemed triumphant to me in Chicago and completely out of perspective. And before I called in, I was reading today's Washington Post, and they have this little tagline in the corner that says, "Democracy dies in darkness." I mean, could anything be more pretentious or more smug? And I think that's why a lot of people get extraordinarily frustrated with the media.
It's 9:42. Scott, stick with us. I got to ask you, what RFK's endorsement of Donald Trump and how it will affect the race, or will it affect it? And also, we're going to get into polls. It's all ahead of Wisconsin Weekend Morning News, and we have 80 degrees at WTMJ. It's going to get up to the mid-90s today. It's 9:45. Brewers beat the A's yesterday, 9-5. We've got coverage beginning today at 2 o'clock with Dominic Catronio.
Is that Klug's music?
It must be.
That's Klug's walk-up music?
Yeah. You getting, yeah. Getting back into politics anytime soon, Scott?
Yeah. My ringtone on my phone is James Brown, which I think is much more applicable, so I'll stick with that.
Hey, let's talk about RFK. Did you have that on your bingo card that he was going to come out with a Trump endorsement?
No, nor do I think it makes a smattering of difference. I mean, you know, maybe if the race turns down to be, you know, 187 votes, it could, but I just don't think he's ever had much momentum. They never had any organization. He was on such few state ballots that he really never seemed to go anywhere. So I'm surprised he sort of stuck around as long as he did. I think this is a graceful way for him to exit. I just don't think it really matters much in the race, no more so than if Cornel West suddenly endorsed Kamala Harris. I mean, it's third-party candidates at the fringes, and since Perot in the 90s, none of the third parties have really had much traction whatsoever.
Scott, I know we're going to talk about polling, and the polling has been a disaster in some instances, but the polling in Wisconsin shows he's at 5%, and if it's as close as in the past, national stuff, I think it doesn't matter, but could it matter in a couple individual battleground states if it's literally less than 25,000 votes, like in a state like Wisconsin?
Sure, it could. But I think what you see historically in third party runs like this is when people actually walk into the poll and decide if it's going to be a wasted vote, they usually vote for one of the mainstream candidates or they don't vote. So I'm not sure how many of the Kennedy people who were 5% would really have ever voted for him. I suspect it'll probably split in both ways. I mean, he seemed to have this sort of strange politics that went so far to the right, it sort of, you know, joined hands on the far left. And I'm just not sure how much that group will vote, how much they'll stick with it, and if Kennedy's endorsement of Trump will even make a difference. Now, maybe I'll be wrong. I mean, you know, it's interesting when people point to Al Gore's loss to George W. Bush, they all point to Florida because Nader, I think, got, you know, I don't know what the number was, 8,000, 9,000 votes, whatever it is. And so the Democrats will always say, well, Ralph Nader cost Al Gore Florida. But if you look, there were four other parties, the Libertarians, the American Conservative Party, that got just as many votes as Ralph Nader did. And so there's always been a third party sort of undercurrent in American politics. But like I said earlier, aside from Furrow in the 90s, it's really been not been much to write home about.
Scott, in your podcast, Lost in the Middle, and that's one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you this morning, you talk quite a bit about polling and how it can be deceptive. What have you found through the years and, you know, going back, for example, to 2016?
Well, you have to go back even earlier than that. I mean, this problem first surfaced, which is, I think, it's still an issue that has a lot of Democratic pollsters concerned, with what were called the Quiet Tories. So the Tories are the Conservative Party in the UK. And they began to discover that in a lot of cases, Tories weren't responding to polling questions from anyone. They would refuse to answer. In some cases, they'd lie just to sort of screw with the pollsters who they saw as part of the media they didn't like very much. And it's been a continuing problem in Britain. I mean, they were completely wrong on the Brexit vote. They were wrong on whether Scotland would leave the United Kingdom. They were even wrong this spring on the most recent parliamentary elections in England, where they got the winning party right, but they badly underestimated the British Liberal Democrats and the British Reform Party. So if you look in the U.S., in 16 it was bad, and then in 20 we're all told the pollsters got it right. Yeah, I'll just point to two things. The projections going in were that Biden was going to win North Carolina and going to win Georgia, and it would be a very early election night. And instead, we were all up till, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning trying to figure out what was going on in Nevada because Biden didn't win those. And even more telling, there were 7 Senate races in the consensus of pollsters that were flat wrong, which means in some cases, Democrats probably had seats they were counting on they weren't close to. In other situations, Republicans could have had races they might have won if they'd reallocated resources there. So I'm really skeptical about this. And I think what you see now, it used to be old-fashioned landline pollsters. And I've got a landline just because my cable system in Madison throws it in along with computer service and regular cable TV. But nobody uses them. So they've got to use what landlines they can find, augmented by online polling, augmented by text polling. And they will freely admit they have to do some calculation of trying to guess what the underreporting is for Republicans and conservatives. And it's a hunch. And in some cases, it worked in 2020. And in some states, they were dead wrong. And, you know, the election, you know, we just did a story in Lost in the Middle on the 7 counties that'll decide the election. So there's 3,700 counties in the country. It's going to come down to the same 6, 7, 8 states we can all predict. And in those 6, 7, 8 states, it's probably 7 counties. One of which, interestingly, is Dane County because it has crazy turnout. In 2020, the turnout rate in Dane County was 90%, which actually seems hard to believe, but that's the number. And that's the number that Democrats will have to hit in order to win Wisconsin. And I look, you know, down the road for me at the University of Wisconsin and ask, will students show up this time? Will there be a protest vote against Gaza? Will there be a big protest vote against Gaza in Michigan, where there's a large Arab community around Michigan? So I think people have to keep in mind that any poll you see today will be outdated tomorrow. They're going to tighten dramatically. And I just think, you know, keep your eyes on the same states. It's Georgia, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Nevada, Michigan, Arizona, and that's probably where the whole election will get decided. And the other thing, when you see bounces in polls like these in conventions, and you two are smart enough to appreciate this, it's polling nationally. So adding 5 points to the Democratic base coming home in New York, or 6 points to the Democratic base coming home in California, in a lot of ways is irrelevant. So what we really should be watching are the 8-10 battleground states and what that polling looks like in the next couple of weeks. And Wisconsin's lucky because Charles Franklin at Marquette does a great job and is probably one of the best in the country. But he knows Wisconsin so well, he can make adjustments to Waukesha and Dane and Washington County that most national pollsters would not be able to make in Wisconsin. So if you want to figure out where the state of the race is in Wisconsin, you can't do any better than Charles.
So, Scott, to your point, Charles Franklin told me 2 weeks ago on our afternoon show that it is a snapshot in time, and it should just be viewed as that literal, minute snapshot in time. Huffington Post, to your point, also in 2016 famously polled and predicted that Hillary Clinton had a 98% chance on Election Day, they polled, instead of beating Donald Trump. Here's my question for you. Should the media stop reporting on the polling? Is it a useless tool?
No, I think you have to do it. I mean, it's like all those magazines now you see in airport hotels trying to preview the NFL season when nobody knows who's going to break their ankle 3 games in. And I think nobody knows what the defining moments will be in the next debate and some speech Trump gives in Pennsylvania on some remarks, you know, Harris fumbles at a press conference in California. It's a long, long way to go. I think the national political press tends to focus on polls because there's so very little news. I mean, at the end of the day, these two presidential candidates are basically going to give the same speech 3 times a day from here until November. But I think it's worthwhile to watch and to get it. I don't see any problem with polls being reported and the press building stories around them. I just think the public needs to be aware that polling is not what it used to be 40 years ago. It's much more fragile and I think much more flawed. And it doesn't reflect the work the pollsters are doing. All they're really trying to do is to talk to whatever their set of people is, you know, 2,000 or whatever it is. But it's harder and harder to find people, A, and B, it's harder and harder to get people to tell you the straight story.
Scott, I thank you again for being here with us this morning. But if people want to hear more, they can follow you on your podcast, Lost in the Middle. Where is it?
Everywhere you want. I mean, it's on, you know, from Amazon to Apple to Spotify. It's Lost Middle, America's Political Orphans, or they can also find links to it in my columns on scottklug.substack.com. And thanks for having me on so early.
Scott, great to have you always. It's 954 on WTMJ.
WTMJ, W277-CV, and WKTI HD2 Milwaukee. From the Annex Wealth Management Studios, this is News Radio WTMJ, a Good Karma brand station.
I'm Libby Collins. It's been great to have John McCure here this morning. He'll be back with the news here in just a couple of minutes. Who's coming back to Wisconsin? Oh, take a guess. Also, I'll be back at 11 o'clock this morning. You want to hear this story. Two twins, 19 years old at the time, went on that walk with Milwaukee activist Frank Nitti to Washington, and you will be on the seat of, you'll just be on the edge of your seat listening to their story. That's at 11 o'clock this morning. And right after the news, it's the Accudent Mortgage and Realty Show right here on WTMJ.